Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on the Wise Women Media, the radio show. We have an interesting guest with us tonight. That would be Sandy Oestreich, who's been working very hard to ratify the ERA amendment here in Florida. She has not called in yet. She should be with us shortly. I did want to go over a few newsworthy items before we get started. The opening song was Sisters Are Doing It for Themselves by the Eurythmics, Dave Stewart, Annie Lennox, along with Aretha Franklin. You can check us out at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. You can see all our archived shows there. You can listen to any of them. They're all ready to play at any time. A list of our sponsors. We have to give a shout out to the Common Projects Network and Here Be Monsters, because they're the ones that give us this time slot so we can do this show every week. Also, hit us up on the GoFundMe link. This is independent media. We do not get corporate funding, so anything that you can throw our way helps us keep the shows coming every week. We have some interesting newsworthy items before we get started. We do have a new Facebook group. It's facebook.com/groups/wisewomenmedia. So join us there on Facebook and interact with us. Let us know who you'd like to see or hear on the show. Suggestions for show topics, feedback, or anything else that you want to write there in regards to media and this show. Greatly appreciated, the feedback especially. So we also have the Facebook page, Wise Women Media, and we're also on Twitter under the same name. Sandy has not called in yet, so let's go to some newsworthy items that I have posted on my Facebook page. The latest thing was Veterans Day social media dialogue, broadening the conversation on the war at home and abroad. This was an interesting article. It was posted to the Iraq Veterans Against the War website. They are launching a social media campaign to shift the dialogue around this upcoming Veterans Day, Monday, November 11th, that implicitly supports war by avoiding any conversation of its costs towards a frank conversation on how U.S. militarism tears at the fabric that bonds our communities and has real impact on people's lives. So as we step into the 10 years of the Iraq Veterans Against the War as an organization, next year these conversations become increasingly important. So instead, IVAW is going to be talking about the costs of war and how significant that is, which tends to be forgotten on Veterans Day. So remember your veterans on November 11th. All of them have a story to tell, that's for sure. Sandy's on the line. Let me click her in here. Sandy, you with us?
I am.
Thank you for joining us, and I wanted to introduce you. This is Sandy Oestreich. She has been working very, very hard to ratify the ERA here in Florida, and Sandy, can you give us just a little description about how this became your life's work and how you got involved?
I don't really know, except that when I was little, an only child, as a little girl, I kept wondering why the boys had all the fun and why when they were bad, it was a thing about boys will be boys, but girls got punished, and I just didn't know about that. That was really 4, 5, and 6 I'm talking about. So I was imbued with that early on, and I was never satisfied my whole life when something was wrong that needed righting. And I've been out on a limb on several things, and most of them wound up successful, a couple didn't. One of them, when I came to Florida, Oh, I guess even before that. Let me think. When I was a professor at Adelphi University in New York, I was teaching nursing, undergraduate and graduate school, and I guess it kind of characterizes it because the first day of grad school, our wonderful professor asked us, what would we do about the healthcare system? Now, this is many, many years ago, and we went around the room. When it got to me, I said, well, first you burn all the hospitals to the ground. And my teacher, you know, kind of was taken aback at that. But the whole point was they were all poorly run, I thought. But I just became a change agent. One thing after another came to Florida. And they had no interlibrary loan here in St. Petersburg, Florida. So, and they had tried for 40 years to get that in place, the librarians had, and they just rolled their eyes when I asked them about it. But I got a group together, and make a long story short, we got that in place. And then I went off on a tear to make sure that non-nurse midwives had a basic education, and they were not just out of high school and delivering babies. I thought that's a much more important professionally required kind of profession. So I went to work and got a law passed that what they call lay midwives at the time and still do have to pass a license at the time. They were required to have 3 years sort of on-the-job training, but it really consisted of only 18 months of clinical and theory practice. So I got that changed, and then, I kept fluoridation out of Pinellas County's waters for 9 years because I began to become aware of the dangers thereof and the fact that we were only fluoridated so that the very important and politically strong fertilizer companies that wound up with fluoride as a waste product didn't have to pay extra money to have it disposed of, discarded as a hazardous waste, but they could actually sell it and put it in water and convince people it was good for their teeth, although no study has ever been done to show that. And then I moved on. I became vice mayor and found out we were the only town, little North Reddington Beach, on the Gulf Beaches was just the only town that did not have an ordinance against what we call porn palaces. So I got two ordinances written for that. And now I'm changing the U.S. Constitution. I'm trying to anyway. So it's kind of grown on me. And I'm sort of like Don Quixote tilting at windmills, but oh, and the other thing that I changed, making St. Petersburg one of only two cities in the United States to have done this, was able to get a coalition of people together to object when the city of St. Petersburg, which in whose city the Bayfront Medical Center resides on city property, we got that to be adjudged to be a dangerous entanglement of religion and state because Bayfront became part of partly religious coalition of hospitals in 1997 in order to get economies of scale by joining together with 9 or 10 other hospitals. But we were able to get Marcia Cohen, a wonderful lawyer, to get a lawsuit filed against City of St. Petersburg for that religious entanglement because, as I say, some of the hospitals were religious and did have some strong tenants that really were purely religious and inappropriate in a community hospital, county hospital, city hospital, actually. And So we were able to go to court and get the religious part of that consortium dismissed. So there's been a lot of things going on. But now we're doing the Constitution, and this is probably really much more important. So that was a long-winded answer.
Should we start with the good news first and then move on about how the steps were taken to get where we're at now?
Sure. The good news being that after Anita Stewart does know about the 13 years we've been working on this, on the Equal Rights Amendment in Florida as one of three states that need to get voted in to ratify the U.S. The Equal Rights Amendment. Three states are needed to do that before it passes into the U.S. Constitution. Just three states. 35 have already done it, and actually Florida's holding them hostage. And they're beginning to complain. There are petitions going around that will be sent to the Florida Chamber of Commerce with the information that these different states are taking positions to boycott Florida until
wow.
it ratifies the Equal Rights Amendment. So
what are the other two states? Are there two states that are close to getting this done
Yeah, there are seven states. We help mentor the other six while we're trying to pass Florida. Of those, we just need three. And the next one up, and I don't know who's going to be first, Florida or Virginia, although it kind of seems like us right now. Virginia, the state of Virginia, has been at it a lot less time than we have, but they have gotten it all the way through the Senate before it dies in the House. Every few years here in Florida, we get it through a Senate committee, but then it doesn't move because the House won't even hear it. The Florida House has refused to hear it for going on 14 years, but there's a great deal of movement there. And the big news I think that you were referring to is the fact that Florida is going to ratify next spring at the early 2014 legislative session. As we have for the first time, we have strong support from the Senate, President Gates, and from the Speaker of the House, Will Weatherford, who really wants an ERA because he realizes his three little girls need a better future. That's his quote. So we have that kind of boost behind us this time, which will probably not occur for another decade, so we're going for it. And it looks like
it's very important to note here to anybody listening that this is not a bipartisan effort. This is nonpartisan. I didn't exactly mean it like that. It's bipartisan. It's nonpartisan. This has nothing to do with political party. This has to do primarily, fundamentally, with women's equal rights. We were not written into the Constitution. The Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, was written for 5% of the population, which were wealthy white landowners. And they were the
male.
Men.
Right.
They were the men. So we were not written into any of that. So this is fundamentally for our rights, and we currently do not have equal rights.
We do not have, I like to call it gender equal treatment, because equal rights is such an abstract that it can be argued endlessly by the other side. Florida stopped arguing with us because we've proceeded every year. They've come up with a new objection or every couple of years, and we get legal briefs to shoot them down 1 year at a time or 2 years at a time. And now they've kind of run out of reasons, and the reasons that they look like they might come up with are really esoteric legal reasons that are best more appropriate to the authority of the U.S. Congress to decide once we get three more states, if they need to. It may just go into the Constitution. It should just go into the Constitution. Meant to, an amendment once it gets 38 states is meant to go right into the Constitution without sway really from Congress. But there's bound to be a pushback because of the political climate. And I hate to keep talking political because I know it is a non, it should, it has all the merits of a non-partisan amendment to the Constitution because it affects 100% of the people. We do struggle for men's gender equal treatment too. They have about approximately three or four, maybe at the most, strong inequalities, and we fight hard for those. Women and girls have a string of inequities that you could find at my website, which is topassera.org. That's topassera.org. We're trying to pass the ERA. So you'll find the list of what women and girls do not have as a result of no ERA in the Constitution at my website I just gave you. If you click at the top, ERA for women, and there's a whole list there. It's quite shocking when you read all the things we do not have. Other nations already have ERA language, and they enjoy those attributes as well as their nation enjoys many of them, or some of them, a growth in their economic progress known as the GDP, or gross domestic product, as much as 9%.
And, so, and I must say, I want to give the listeners the website URL again. It's two, passera.org. And the another URL will also get you there. It's www.ratifyeraflorida, all one word, .net. That will take
and
you
the
to
reason,
the same.
Yeah, the, we prefer... We would have preferred to drop the first, the last, the second half of that, if we could have, and not lost our supporters, our current traffic, so to that site. So the preferred one is topassera.org, but the other one sticks on the end. We've grown out of Florida now that we are the National Equal Rights Amendment Alliance, and we have many followers all over the nation, a few of them international, in fact, but mostly it's Florida, of course, which is most appropriate.
And when you go, I want to say this also, when you go to the website, each one of those buttons there, ERA for millennials, ERA resolution, ERA for men, ERA for women, ERA explained, all these buttons take you to a different place that will give you complete descriptions. You can look at the site in Spanish. There's stuff to print out. There's talking points handout. There's links. There's FAQs, facts for legislators if you're going to speak to your legislators. Other states' bills, unratified states, it breaks them down and tells you where they're at on this, religion and the ERA, and so much more. It's all on this website. So I would encourage anybody listening to check it out. Now, when you go into the FAQs, it has a lot of information, so you can perhaps break some of this down for us. What specifically does the Equal Rights Amendment say that would give women equality?
Well, it gives men gender equal treatment too, but we take the brunt of it. There's three sections to the Equal Rights Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, but the meat of it, I think, the important part, the other is just protocol. Section 1 says, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. That means gender. In the day that was written, that was written in 1943, The first version was written in 1923, and actually it would have been a more substantial and inclusive verbiage than this one. You'll see in it, you know, those people who, even like our own politicians, our own legislators, always want to make it about sex of some kind, whether it's unisex bathrooms or women in the military or pregnancy terminations or abortion. I'm forgetting the last one. But anyway, so that it just basically refers to gender equal treatment in amongst all Americans. And it actually, and I've had legal opinion on this, the Equal Rights Amendment actually would make sex discrimination, male and female, a violation of the U.S. Constitution in many cases. That would mean actual equal gender treatment across the board for both both genders. When you read what we don't have you at ERA for Women, you'll see how important that is. That would include equal wages, and which we're already supposed to have under the Equal Pay Act of 1964. It just goes to show you that laws, the 14th Amendment, and various state constitutions don't measure up in giving protection, particularly to women and girls in the United States, for gender equal treatment. So we have to put this in the Constitution. It's the only thing that'll do it. And other nations have it. What's holding us back?
I think it's important to note, too, that 53% of the voters are women. So we are truly the majority.
We are. The numbers I read are anywhere from 51 to 52, maybe 53%. But the Anita's absolutely right. We are the majority. Why are we thrown under the bus? Why are we sitting at the back of the bus? Why don't we even get on the bus? We are second class. Absolutely, no matter where you turn, there's that onus of being second class, and you'll see that when you get to, and I hope you do go to ERA for Women and see that list. It's quite encompassing, quite disturbing. So we want to do this. It's just something that I've already told the Florida legislature that they've seen us in the hallways and they've seen us in their offices, both in the district and in Tallahassee. We go up there every session. And for a long while, since we have no money, we used to sleep on the floor. Now we actually get a motel room or two or three or four. Up there, and we need to do this. It's embarrassing, and like I say, there other states are boycotting us now for the lack of. They're horrified. Tourists come here and they're horrified. What do you mean you didn't pass? We did that 30 years ago. What's wrong with you folks? And legislators don't like to hear that, but they're going to hear plenty of that this session. I can see. So,
now, the big issue is that, especially with millennials, because they think this has already been done. So what's some talking points that we would actually say to the youngers?
Well, I do speak before college classes in high school. I speak wherever I'm invited to speak. We do this, as we should really say, for free with 300,000 members and 326 major organizations, and our really important people are very active activists, and there are 7,805 of them as of yesterday, who give speeches everywhere around Florida at the legislative delegation. They give speeches before their legislators in their county every fall, and we're doing that. We're in the middle of that right now. But that's just a little brief about who we are. But the millennials are in particular distress. If you know any, you know they are. They are swamped in a rape culture. And it's shocking to know that, but it's true. In fact, the most it's starting to make the internet rounds, but I read it a couple of days ago. There's a company actually making for millennials, and those are people, it kind of varies, but it probably runs until you're about 21 years of age, somewhere like between 15 and 22 maybe years of age. It varies. But they're actually making anti-rape panties that are tailored to each person and quite expensive at this point, but they cannot be pulled off or even cut off. And this is protective of our young millennials. But women, grown women, are subject to rape. The military still today has a huge problem with military rapes among colleagues. The service women have been forced in Afghanistan and other outposts across the world. They've been forced to voluntarily stop drinking water after supper so they don't have to go to the latrine in the dark across the dusty desert by themselves.
It opens up a whole other can of worms and definitely enough material for another show, but it's called MST, Military Sexual Trauma, and it doesn't just affect women. This rape culture has now overlapped, and in the military, some of the victims are men as well.
And, yes, I heard a high figure of 50, more than 50%, but I don't know the source of that, and I question it. But there's rape everywhere, and there's domestic violence that's increasing. There is marital rape.
right.
Women are passed over at work. Don't get raises, don't get through the glass ceiling. We're just trampled on, and we've gotten so inured to it, so immune to it, that we don't even feel it until we start talking about it. That's what happened in the 70s when the ERA first came out. We had groups, we called them consciousness-raising groups. And,
oh, I remember those. Yes, I do.
Do you too? Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, I sure do.
And those were the days when we were really imbued with the old traditional catering to men, as a natural course of events. We didn't think a thing of it. We squirmed a little bit, but we started doing these consciousness-raising groups, and they were wonderful, because we would have what is known as the aha, when we would be passing around stories, and when sex discrimination, there wasn't even a word for it then, when that came out of a story, we would look at each other and say, aha, there's another instance. So we became aware. And the other thing, not to diverge too much, the other thing that I would love to get a project going on, if I could just find, I've approached several organizations, if I could just find a group, an organization, a well-established organization that would just give us space at their conventions for seminars on assertiveness. During the 70s, women started to know what assertiveness was, what their rights should be, and how to assert them. If you don't assert your rights, you don't have them, essentially. And that was a wake-up for all of us in this early 70s and late 60s. And to this day, I find it shocking that so many strong women, leaderly women in some cases, will shy away from standing up and speaking. Very often when I used to, when I would speak before, let's say, a men's group, which I do a lot of, I speak before any group, and I would ask them to make sure they asked a certain question. When the, you know, in the course of events of the evening when I was speaking those days, and one by one I would find they just couldn't bring themselves to stand up and speak on this subject or say a word. In fact, the interesting thing is it's still there because I have a group here, and they're wonderful women. All of these are just marvelous treasures. Because they understand what it's about, and they will support us when we go places. They will do things. But I spoke before the Pinellas Legislative Delegation, which is, as I say, the group of legislators that we send to Tallahassee, our capital, right here in Pinellas County. And seven people came with me, including my husband. And the wonderful women that came with me and sat next to me when it came for me to speak, they were too shy to come up to the microphone but stood at their seats, which, you know, that's not a criticism. It just shows how intimidated we are by authority. And by rights, they should have stood right next to me quite at ease, but they couldn't do it. And didn't do it, which is, you know, didn't make a bit of difference, really, but I did notice it. And these things happen. We need to do role-playing. You know, what are your rights, and how do you express your rights without being aggressive? And I find a very excellent word to use is reasonable. I think it's reasonable that so-and-so, don't you?
Right. That's a good word. I wanted to note that somebody in the chat room, I don't want to give any names, though, said, and this person I know and is a veteran like myself, and she says, in 1992, I turned in a guy who tried to rape me and while she was in the military and was ostracized by her peers and supervisors because this would end his career. And, oh, she said, sorry, 1982.
Okay.
She said, I believe that sexual assault is grossly underreported in the military.
It is.
And she also says, I have to say that I was gratified that the base police who responded to my report beat the crap out of the guy because that is the only consequence he suffered. See, back in, and she's talking about a time when I was always also active duty in 1982 at the same time.
Really?
And I was put in a situation with my supervisor and given a message that if I didn't play ball, and you know what playing ball consisted of, that he was life difficult, and he did. And there was, at the time, there was no, you know, in, even in, if you were a civilian and you were working for a company, there would be, it was the same in the military. There was no place to go. There was no office to go to. There was no person that was designated, you know, to speak to about those kinds of issues in the workplace. And women basically, at that time, from what I remember, we had to put up or shut up, you know, or be silent. We could say no, but generally things didn't work out too well for us if we said no. And I think this is part of this situation that you're talking about where women...
It's power, yeah. Rape is about power, not about... Yeah, rape is about power over someone helpless. It's not about a sexual need.
It's rape, and it's not just rape. It's sexual harassment. I mean, my supervisor never had his way with me, but it was the sexual harassment that had this kind of, I would say, mental and emotional implications and definitely a power over because he had the power over me to make my life miserable.
And you knew that. And you know that in the workplace today. I just was reading today that Senator Gillibrand is still trying to get her main goal with relation to this kind of military abuse is to make sure or take away the authority of deciding who's to blame and in these incidents and who, you know, who's the perpetrator, who's not, take it away from the commanders who basically, you know, are still imbued with the boys will be boys things, and these happen when you put women in there. You knew it coming in, so, you know, you got what's coming to you, is what's still there. 26,000 people, now I imagine this includes men too, last year had rape incidents. Only 1,500, I think is the number, stepped forward because they know they're going to be in trouble. And the latest reports we're getting is that the pre-trial, I forget what they call it in the military, pre-trial investigation I don't know what they call it. Anyway, that's carried out by the military with a rape victim is excruciating.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And harassment really in and of itself and abuse.
Right.
They ask you, are you lesbian? And how many sexual encounters have you had? And with whom? And didn't you know you were out, you know, by the latrine that night? You know, it's dark. You know, should have stayed in your room. Stayed in the barracks. And this is still, that was 2012. And the rape incidents have gone up by 50% already this, by June, I think it was, of this year. So they're either being reported more or there are more of them. And I don't know which it is. But the Senator Gillibrand is having a tough time with the commanders who do not want to give up that authority to say to the guys, well, you shouldn't have done it maybe, but, well, it's over now. Let's move on. And
I remember watching a little bit of that on, I think it was on C-SPAN, and it was, you know, an investigative committee that was doing the questioning, and I remember watching some portions of that. I think people will want to know, if we have to bring all this up again about the ERA, in regards to Florida and two other states, what happens about the other 35 states?
That's a really good question because that's what those are the technical angles that are now coming that Florida legislators are now trying to call upon now that they've used up all the other usual ones that kill it in other states. The fact, I think you're asking, are those still good? Isn't that what you're really saying? Are those states still good, those ratifications? Is that your question? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the question.
And it's a very good question because those 35 are still good, which most people don't understand. ERA was never dead. And the other part of that question really relates to the five votes that were rescinded. Five states rescinded their votes, and they can do that, but they were not accepted at the time. In fact, one was absolutely thrown out, and four were never accepted and have never been accepted as fact. Now, when Congress, when the three states do ratify, and that should be fairly soon, we think the gridlock will be broken when one state does ratify. When that happens, then the second section, I believe it is, to the Equal Rights Amendment says how that will be adjudicated, what will be the process. Well, Congress can step in and say, well, what about those 35 states? Are they still any good? So we expect a debate on that, and we expect a debate also on the other question that is now coming up of a legal nature. And that is the time limit. Wasn't there a time limit, and didn't it die? Well, there was a time limit in the proposing clause, which is the introductory clause to the Equal Rights Amendment itself. And it's not a votable part of the legislation, and it has already been changed. At least it has been changed once. The first time limit gave ERA 7 years, and with some discussion in Congress, it was extended to 10 years. So it went from 1972 to 1982, but it never ended. There's no time limit to it. Some amendments to the Constitution, in fact, I don't think the earlier amendments had any time limit whatsoever, and they began to see that maybe that could be a problem. You could have an amendment kicking around for years and not be amended, although that, I guess that did happen in one instance, the Madison Amendment. But in this case, they just applied it to the Equal Rights Amendment too, which in and of itself, some constitutional lawyers say, is unconstitutional. How much time do you give for an Equal Rights Amendment for 100% of the population? This is a huge amendment. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 years, 2 years. So there are substantive arguments that we have against that, and we have, in order to obstruct that or clarify that, I'm not sure how to say it, we have co-authored a bill between four of us states that is now in the United States House and Senate that solves that problem, saying that once, just flat out, once three states ratify, then the Equal Rights Amendment is passed and goes direct into the archivist who puts it in the Constitution without any intervening steps by Congress or others. So we're busy getting co-sponsors to that. I've gotten almost all of the Florida Democrats co-sponsoring that, and working on the Republicans in Florida to co-sponsor that. And we've got quite a large number of co-sponsors there. So it's a busy time for me and us in the Equal Rights Alliance, because we're busy gathering sponsors there in Congress and in our own bills in Florida and helping mentor the states as they file their bills. They use our website, particularly Facts for Legislators, and write me handwritten thank you notes, because everything is validated there, and it really doesn't require that much research because we've done it all, and it's quite a long list of questions that come up and the actual facts behind them or the rationales behind them. So it's a fulsome website. But we've kind of wandered off topic, and I'm sorry, Anita. Where would you like to go now? Or would somebody like to call in?
I don't understand, because this is something that affects every single American, male, female, transgender, born, unborn. It affects everyone. Why would people oppose this? Why anybody in their right mind oppose this? Do you have any comments on that or ideas?
We've gotten... we don't have an absolute answer, but there are many arguments against it, and they spring from many sources, one of which is the hardest to overcome, and that's just tradition. And that's what we said before. We're all kind of pre-programmed to have the man be the master of the house, the one who makes the decisions and all of that, at least going back to my young years, it was like that. And to some extent, it probably is, although the young men today seem to be partnering more because their wives are working and they value that work, whereas in our day, the men let us work, if you recall.
I remember that. I remember that specifically with my mother, because when they moved When we moved to Florida, because I'm a little bit younger than you, but not much.
I'm sorry
and
to keep dragging you into,
down here,
into
my father
age.
Always the breadwinner, and we were moving here, and everything starting out new, buying a new house and everything. My mother says, oh, I'll go to work and help my husband out.
Mm-hmm.
And he let her go to work, just like you said.
And now they marry women who have a good job.
Later, he was running around on her. All of a sudden, he had free time, you know, and he didn't have to come right home because she wasn't coming right home. And,
whatever.
Yeah, before you know it, that was
there's a lot of opposition.
You know, things changed, I think, in that generation.
Well,
for women.
Yeah,
women
in that
all
respect.
Of a sudden,
yeah.
You know, we're alone. We were the ones, like the song, we were the ones, sisters are doing it for themselves, because all of a sudden, you know, divorces went sky high. And,
that's
and
right,
women were, you know. So things.
Oh, you were asking about the different problems with opposition, but the traditional or historical part plays a heavy role, and it's so embedded that we don't see it until we do, you know, sit down and think about, no, why is this way or that way? There's religion plays a role. Religious traditions augment the historical or traditional position that, well, there's always got to, my father used to say, there's always got to be a captain of the ship. You know, he was Navy, or Coast Guard, and that kind of thing. Well, no, we know now that we can partner on all this stuff, and the guys kind of like that, because like you say, they don't have to do it all. And there's also this big threat to male power. That is also against it. My husband, we have long discussions. My husband seems to think that men may feel, and I think some women have voiced this too, men may feel that they've kept us down so long that once we are freed from these bonds, that we will turn the tables on them and become a threat.
I
don't know. I mean, I don't think that's in us, but it could be. I don't know. But and they're just thinking of also they fear financial or political losses in terms of power. There's just a cultural and social and historical and sexual or gender problem that keeps us down. We're changing the landscape of America when you really think about it. And so that raises a lot of hairs on the back of men's necks, because a lot of men don't like social change. They don't like change of any sort. A lot of women are like that too, but it seems more threatening to men that women have gender equal treatment. The fact that they're now flying, you know, fuel transport planes to refuel the bombers and that are flying around Afghanistan and so forth is very threatening. And the thing that I watched today at the video that I watched today about the military and sexual behavior and such showed that it's just you're different, and therefore you scare me is kind of what the frightening thing that men say. So that explains why you probably don't remember this, but I do. When we first started going to work in great droves in the Second World War, and then were sent home, because men were coming back to work. When we first started doing that and getting corporate positions, we women in particular, I didn't do it because I think I was too young for this, but we started wearing pantsuits. Until that time, pants were slacks, were as we called them, were frowned upon. believe it or not. And we wore, you know, suit jackets and pants then as a badge of courage, I guess. And we wore bow ties. We were trying to be like men because we sensed that the more like men we were, the less of a threat we were. And it's so silly, but we did do that, and we don't do that anymore. It's a lot that we don't do anymore that has helped us a great deal. A lot hasn't. We've taken up smoking that the men did, and our lung cancer rates are the same as men's now. So some of it's not so good, and we need to be ourselves, but we have to first find our own bearings. And part of that, I think, is learning how to be assertive. Not aggressive, but assertive.
Joanne in the chat room says, our mother went to work to empower herself, not being beholden to our father. He felt that she, hang on just a second, something got posted and it moved. Hang on.
Okay.
Felt that she made the money. He felt that he made the money and ruled the roost. So when she made the money, he had a say. And when you're beholden to someone, you are in a weak position.
Exactly. She's so correct.
Yeah, our grandmother once bought a rug at the cost of 25 cents. Our grandfather told her that if she didn't take it back and get that quarter back, he would wring her neck with it. And
Whoa.
She also made a comment, pantsuits lived on into the 70s. Boy, do I remember the pantsuits, and I remember the, you know, like the unit, what were those called, the bloody unit things, you know, they were like the pants that you put on, and it had the top and it had the zipper. What the heck was the?
Or you're talking about a jumpsuit or something? Not a
jumpsuit. Whatever. And you know, if in Congress, our female legislators for a very long time could not wear pants on the House floor.
Really?
Yes, the first person to wear pants on the House floor, a fighter from the get-go, was Congresswoman and later Green Party presidential candidate Cynthia McKinney.
Oh, right.
Was the first one to wear pants. And she probably just did it and said, to hell with them. If they don't like it, tough. I'm wearing them.
Yeah, cold. Yeah. It was all about being, you know, keeping women in their place, and it's still like that. And that's what the ERA opposition is all about, keeping us in our place, because if they ever freed us, we'd propel change that would just devastate them, they think. And actually,
well,
it's not so.
We are hardwired as women to think about the home front first and what's going to benefit our households, our children, if we don't have children, our animals, you know, or our mates, whether they be a male mate or a female mate or whoever.
Right. Yeah, that's family.
We are hardwired to think of that first. So, no, we don't want an oil well in our backyard, and no, we don't want to have fluoride in our water, in our watershed. So we're going to be thinking about all these things as we receive these bills, you know, as the lobbyists come to visit us, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to be taking all that into consideration, and I'm sorry, I'm appalled at some of our women legislators now, because it seems like they've gone beyond the pale and have definitely voted in the interests of the corporations and put profits first instead of people, which, you know, it's not that way. It's not what the men were thinking at all were going to happen. Now the women are toe-to-toe. Most of them that are sitting, I mean, anybody can go to ontheissues.org and see these legislators vote, whether they be male or female. You can see what they voted on and how they voted on it. And nothing's a secret. And you can go to opensecrets.org and you can see who funded their campaigns.
Yes,
so
I've done that.
You're a woman and you're taking money from the nuclear industry, then I have to wonder, where's your head at? Are you thinking about your grandchildren? Are you thinking about, you know, your great-grandchildren or seven generations from now? So Cynthia McKinney and another writer that she quoted that I cannot remember the name of called them women of the hegemony.
Oh,
and I wish I could remember the name of the author that wrote that stated that, because these are the women that have become like men to maintain their power and position.
Yeah, I've just watched a brand new female legislator. I don't know her well, but I know her. And I've watched her. She's brand new, and she succumbed already to that. Discouraging. The couple of things happen when you I don't think we women really recognize what sacrifices these women legislators make, because they're in such a minority, number-wise and power-wise, that in the beginning they have to remain kind of silent, get their feet under them, and they take many years to get to the point where they'll stand up and, for really important contentious bills. And part of that is because when it's just a group dynamics, when a strange person comes into a group, they adopt the mores of that group just to fit in, you know, go along kind of. What plays into that, I'm sorry to say, is that we women will work very hard to get, if we're civic minded or obsessed like I am with the equal treatment, we get behind our women that are good, our men that are good, you know, on all our issues. But when a woman moves into, wins the election and moves into her seat, we abandon her. She's there surrounded by men, quite macho men. Look at all the men that in Congress that have, molested their peers, and the lists of men that have done that. So a woman really goes into foreign territory, knows it keenly, and switches gears for a while. Some get out of it, some don't. Some perfect it. The greed and that just suffuses the whole political scene right now. And I think they put aside family and environmental issues and all the things that matter to women, safety, hygiene, health, all those things kind of go by the wayside. I know that when I became vice mayor in our little town, there had always been a lot of talk about, much talk, and rightly so in some instances, about drains and taxes, you know, and pipes and things like that, you know. And I used to grab the microphone and just hammer at some of the other issues. Why don't we talk about this instead of those mechanical things? Why don't we discuss these important issues in our town, you know? And, so I was kind of a rabble-rouser even then. But I got a couple of things done that were good. I've stopped a porn palace from moving into our little town, and got sexual harassment embedded in our ordinances. Not that we needed it. Oh, and a drug-free workplace I got in pretty much right away. Those were things that hadn't ever occurred. We just need diversity. We need women in equal numbers in proportion to the population in the legislatures are in the local municipal offices or state local offices, federal government. We need them everywhere. It's run like a fiefdom, you know.
Right,
when you
right.
Go, when you go speak before the legislative delegations, if unless it's an election year where they're particularly kind and courteous suddenly, you really are like the peasant approaching the throne with your three-minute, you know, speech that you want to give. We give 67 of them every year, one before each county. We get constituents to give my speech. I write it. They give it pretty much, although they can write their own if they wish. But it's like petitioning the throne. I mean, how do you change the Constitution in 2 minutes, which is what I had in Pinellas before the Pinellas
right.
legislature? It's just ridiculous. We need more women, and we need women to understand that they need to be in office. It's a civic obligation, just like it is for men. And they are well qualified. The first thing we need to be encouraging each other. When I speak before a group of women, I say each one of you could be running for office. Just think about what you could bring to it as opposed to what you see going on right now in official offices. You know, and it never occurs to them, but once in a while you'll find somebody and you will say to them, you know, you really ought to run for office. And the first thing she always says is, oh, I couldn't. I don't know how, you know. And the men say, I'll give it a whack. It's so different. You know, they're already entitled.
I think at this point we've passed the tipping point. I don't know. Everybody, you know, a lot of women could run for different positions. But here in Florida, for instance, you have to have $10,000 just to get on the ballot if you don't want to collect the tipping.
Yeah.
Have to be funded by big money before you're ever going to get covered or before you're going to even go to the state house. I'm just talking at the state level. Federal level is a whole different ballgame.
The state level is now phenomenal. Even the state level is a horrendous cost. And what women they say women have the money in this country. Well, maybe older widows do, but the average woman running for office doesn't. And the dirty little secret is the political parties are run by men, and they don't. They manage not to fund women's campaigns.
The Green Party insists on gender balance. The Green Party is probably the only political party that I know of that. When they're electing officers, any position is
I didn't know that.
Or
I think that's great.
There's a gender balance. There has to be a gender balance, and that's written in the platform. That's written in the Green Party platform. So I don't know of any other party that does that.
I doubt any does, frankly.
Yeah, and feminism is one of the key. One of the 10 key values of the Green Party. Anybody who's interested in seeing more of that information or reading the platform, you can go to gp.org. GP for Green Party.org.
Right.
And you can look at the form.
I'm writing that down. Yeah. I didn't
only,
know that. It'd be interesting to.
The global political party, and this was one of the things that was agreed on in the very beginning. There was a whole bunch of information about the states here. There's six states besides Florida that filed ratification bills, and those are Arkansas, Louisiana, Illinois, Missouri, Nevada, and Virginia, which was the one state that came closest to ratification.
Virginia, you're right, right. Twice.
Yet the assembly,
they came
like the Florida's House, refuses to address the issue.
Right.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Once the ERA gets heard, it passes like it did in Senate, out of Senate committees, bipartisan, overwhelmingly. But it's cute the way it's done, and has been done. If you go on my site, you'll also see the history of the bills in Florida. They have alternated over time since the 70s. One house will pass it and the other won't. And then they developed this sort of off-the-books kind of rule that if one house doesn't hear a bill in the session, it doesn't proceed any further. So we keep having the Senate committees do it. But now we've broken the mold because Speaker Weatherford actually got the first committee of reference this past year in 2013. To hold a workshop. We were holding out for a hearing. I mean, you know, why would you have a workshop? Well, I guess the Republicans who dominate, really, the whole legislature, you know, it's two-thirds Republican, I guess they thought that they would have a big contentious outcry like they do in the other states. But we've been at it so long, we fought them down on all their issues, all their made-up falsehoods about the ERA, so they had no objection, and it could have been a hearing. It would have passed out of committee because none of the committee members, although more than half are you would say staunch Republicans, none of them had any objections. They had a couple of questions. That was it. So the chairman was stunned. And it's a repeat. He is chairman again of the same committee wherein the ERA resides as a first committee of reference. And he said for the press, "I heard no objections from my members. We have to find some way to move this bill." So we actually had almost a month left in the session. So we poured in postcards and phone calls and said, "Hold a hearing." And it never happened. But it's in that committee again, and we are reminding him daily with our phone calls that, you know, you did say we have to find a way to move the bill. It's simple. Hold a hearing. And I think we're going to get it. And that
now
will break the gridlock.
Before we get to the end of the show, I want you to talk about this date coming up in January and explain exactly what we're going to be doing. And we need people to stand with us on this particular day. Can you tell us a little bit about
what we're... I wanted to bring that up. It's actually February, and it's February 4th with a carryover to February 5th. I believe it's a Tuesday and Wednesday. Unfortunately, it's always during a work day that the Florida legislature holds anything. It's just aggravating, but they do. So we're having on February 4th, and we need every possible body in Tallahassee or at Tallahassee. We're going to have a protest march on the Tuesday, the February 4th, and we already have the permits. We're going to march around the Capitol. We've got to surround it, and so we're going to need lots of people. Hordes of people are what legislators understand best.
Right,
they do. It is the most effective thing. Letter writing is excellent. Postcards, like we do, come in by carloads, and they're good. Phone calls are good. Emails are good. But bodies really impresses them. And the way it stands now, oddly enough, I think the Florida legislature has been ready for some time to do this, but they keep looking at each other. If you notice, men seem to be, in general, not always, pretty conforming, and they're a little bit afraid to step out of order and say, "Hey, it's time to pass this damn thing." You know?
It's a group mentality, in other words.
I guess so. They will say it to me privately, and yet none of them will speak up. And now they're beginning to see, as we get more Republicans signing on as co-sponsors, as well as all the Democrats, they're beginning to see that and talk to each other and find out, we don't know why we're against this, but we just are against it.
And, the other thing on January 20th...
They're not as rabid as they were. That's what I'm saying. I'm sorry, Anita. Go ahead.
The other thing on January 22nd for the Pasco delegation, can you talk about that?
Oh, yes. We're yet to... As I said, we do 67 speeches, and I'm doing the ones locally. I did the Pinellas County. I spoke before the Pinellas County one. Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't understand what your January was all about. January 22nd, we will speak before the Pasco County one. And the reason for that in particular that I want to be at is that's, that will be before the Speaker of the House, Will Weatherford. And I want him to see that we have a large body of people. I think I will be asking people to stand up. If they, several people, including possibly yourself, Anita, might go with me.
I'm probably going. Yeah, I'm. As far as I know, I have the date marked off on my calendar. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Anybody
by hook
else
or by crook,
go.
If I've got a call off, I'm going to do it. But I'm going to be there. I think it's important that
we stand
for this. And Will Weatherford, he's the one who made the comment about his three girls that he wants to get this. Because it does.
Right.
I don't care if he's Republican. That isn't even.
No, we need Republicans. They're decent guys in themselves. You know, it's just in groups that there seems to be some kind of obstruction. But he is the one who heads up the entire Republican legislature, the 2/3 of the House.
So hopefully, if our summation is correct, and they are in a group mentality, if he says I'm for this, then everybody else is going to say, "Oh, I'm for it too."
Well, you're absolutely correct. That's why this is such a coup that it is me. I'm sorry if I sound bragging, but it is me that has won them over by just attending their district meetings and driving all the way up to Destin to meet with Senate President Gates. But I didn't need much from him because he had already voted for it in committee, speaks about it publicly. He just has, neither one has come out and said it for the public press. And so just today I got myself together and I reached way out of my boundaries, and I called them, each of them, and I wrote them a follow-up email requesting that since the public was asking, would they please each do, or do one together, a press release giving the strength of their support for the Equal Rights Amendment for the public to see. And it didn't. I was afraid I would hear, "Oh, we can't do that." But I didn't. I heard them say, "Well, we'll send it to the communications director." That means that they're going to work something up.
Wow!
And I know this is what I've been asking all along, and they have not had what seems to be the courage to say it publicly. And I've been saying it, and I have not been believed, because we know there's a war on women, and we know the source of which party is behind that. And so many women just flat don't believe me. Many organizations don't believe me. So I figured this is the way to do it, get a press release out there. I think they were kind of waiting for it, almost the way they sounded. But whether they'll do it or not, I don't know. But I'm still saying it because it's the truth. And women need to engage with this because though we have 300,000 members and 7,800 active activists, we need more people on the ground with me.
Spence, I want to make sure everybody's got these dates. These two events, the first one is January 22nd, 2014. It's going to take place in Pasco County. We don't have all the details yet, but if you want the details as they come, I have them.
I have the details already.
Well, let me just tell your email address. It's Sandy,
please.
Sandy, the letter O, at passera.org. PASSERA. Sandy O at passera.org. Email Sandy, and she will let you know the details of the January 22nd event, which is local to us since we're in the Tampa Bay area. It'll be in Pasco County. And then the February 4th event, which will be a two-day event taking place in Tallahassee.
That will be
I'm hoping
a,
I can
a,
go
a,
that one as well.
A protest on February 4th, followed up by the legislators giving a press conference, and we'll have a rally. The next day we'll have a brunch, and we're going to do a sit-in in the offices if we don't already have a commitment for a hearing. So that, but there's more than PASCO going on. I think it's January 21st. I'm going to be speaking in Hillsboro at their legislative delegation, and then
Miami. Well, I should go to that one.
Sure, why not?
Now, is Susan Smith going as well?
Susan, what, honey?
Is Susan Smith also going to be at the Hillsboro?
Yes.
One.
No, I don't know for sure. I'm trying to keep too many things in my head. I know she's going to PASCO.
Okay.
But I haven't approached on Hillsboro, and then the Sarasota, Miami, Dade. All of these are key because the Hillsboro one has the committee has as it's as part of the attending audience, the legislator of our Senate First Committee, and that's Senator Tom Lee. He has told us in the past that he's just last year he was just waiting for the House to see what they would do. Each legislator is looking at the other legislator and saying, well, let's see what they do. This I find is a trait of men in office quite a bit. There's not an awful lot of initiative there, but I'm not criticizing because there's a lot of politics going on that I don't know anything about between all these folks. And Tom Lee's a fine man, and I have strong feelings that he will pass it once it's heard there. We just have to get it passed by the House. At least out of the first committee, get it moving so that the Senate sees it is moving and all of those holdout people see it's moving and understand that the powers that be want this and put it all together, and it's an amalgam of victory for the Equal Rights Amendment in the next session here in Florida. A long, hard pull that no other state has done in 30 years. So we need to break the gridlock. We need to be in Tallahassee on February 4th, that's for sure. And accompany us, if you can, to Sarasota, Hillsboro, PASCO, and I forget what other ones we're doing in the local area here. But Anita, I thank you very much. This has been a great conversation. I've had an awful lot of fun. Thanks for bearing with me all this time.
And, it was a pleasure to have you. You were on quite a long time ago, maybe a year and a half ago, and we
I
definitely
know it.
Needed, you know, the update on
yeah,
exactly
well, we
what's
didn't
happening.
Know for
news,
didn't know for
you know?
Sure there we had we didn't know for sure that at that time that we had the influentials on our side. We knew,
right.
You know, we sort of knew, but we didn't have it, and we still don't have it in writing, and that's what we're waiting for, because people are so inured to not having ERA move that we have to light a few fires. It's moving. We have to take this opportunity to move on this one bright ray of sunshine where these two men are for it, because this won't happen again for at least another decade or more.
So I want people to know how to find you. Again, Sandy's email address is sandyo@passera.org, and you can check out the website at 2passera, that's the number 2passera.org. Tons of information on this website. I call it light reading before bedtime.
Yeah,
if you
I
want
bet.
To know about the ERA, you've got actions alerts, the ERA survey, ERA for the economy. This is something for every single citizen in the United States, and why it hasn't been done, it's really confounding.
May I just say, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just want to say, if you don't mind, the Sandy O at Pass ERA is S-A-N-D-Y-O, not S-A-N-D-I. S-A-N-D-Y-O. P as in Paula, A as in Apple, S as in Sarah, ERA.org. And thank you, Anita. Thank you, audience. Write me, about anything.
To everybody who's listening in, whether you're listening to the live broadcast or the archive, And we'll see you next week on another installment of Wise Women Media. Check us out at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com and make sure you hit us up on the GoFundMe link so we can keep these independent reports coming. And I'm going to leave you all with a song by Chaka Khan, one of my favorites, called I'm Every Woman. So you all have a great weekend. Thank you, Sandy. And you can come back anytime and give us an update, okay?
Yeah, sure thing.
All right. Good night, everyone. I hope you enjoy the song. Have a wonderful weekend.